The views and opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of WEFT-FM, Prairie Air Incorporated, Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the Weft Associates. And now here is this week's edition of IMC Radio News.
Why do we produce the IMC Radio News?
Because the chasm isn't left to right. It's top to bottom.
To give voice to people who aren't heard.
To bust up the myth of objective journalism.
Bill O'Reilly does not have a monopoly on the truth.
To build our community and re-educate the public.
To revive the voice of organized labor.
To bring forth debate so as to animate democracy.
Because I want to agitate for revolution.
Listen to the voices of your community on IMC Radio News.
This week on IMC Radio News, anti-bee's knees on the WTO, and Jim Hightower on corporate greed. Stay tuned.
Here's a love song to infinity.
That was Dr. Dawes' Theory of Everything as recorded at the recent IMC Fest. And here is Auntie Bee's Knees with your business news update.
Hello, this is Auntie Bee's Knees with your business report for the week of September 8th. Peace activists are working hard this week to oppose and disrupt an international arms fair being held in the UK from September 9th to 12th. The Defence Systems and Equipment International Exhibition and Conference, or DSEI, takes place at the Docklands Excel Centre in East London. The four-day show includes 950 exhibitors, warships cruising the Thames, fighter helicopter displays, and brainstorming sessions on topics like integrated multinational defence and unmanned military vehicles. The Excel Centre, a modern complex in London's Docklands, will host companies selling small arms, missiles, planes, tanks, military electronics, warships, armored cars, surveillance equipment, chemical weapons defense, and riot control gear to buyers from all over the world. At least one manufacturer of cluster bombs will be in attendance, though manufacturers have been kindly asked not to put the controversial bombs on display. Cluster bombs dispense a number of submunitions that are supposed to explode on impact, but often lie waiting to be disturbed, usually by hungry children mistaking the bombs for food packets. At least two manufacturers of depleted uranium shells will also be exhibiting at DSEI. Depleted uranium is a highly toxic heavy metal used to coat armor-piercing shells. Ingestion of depleted uranium dust from exploded shells has been linked to kidney damage, cancer, and central nervous system disorders. Many defense companies plan the launch of new systems and equipment, as well as the announcement of significant orders, alliances, and joint ventures to coincide with the show. Multinational defense contractors like BAE Systems, General Dynamics, Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, Raytheon, and Ultra Electronics will be on hand to display their latest death-accelerating creations, alongside less likely companies such as Daimler Chrysler, Ford, Goodrich, Inglis, and the Puget Sound Rope Company. Though the DESI is an international affair, only weapons manufacturers from certain parts of the world will be exhibiting, such as the UK, US, Canada, Europe, Israel, South Africa, Australia, Malaysia, Thailand, and Pakistan. Among the Canadian companies taking part in this extravaganza are Fort Erie, Ontario's AeroSafe Technologies, a manufacturer of machinery parts for aerospace defense and satellite surveillance. Montreal's CAE will also be taking part. CAE provides training and advanced simulation technologies to military clients around the world, including the U.S. Navy, which has recently awarded CAE a contract worth up to $12 million. Also attending from Montreal, Ingenuity Technologies sells visualization software for major defense contractors. Ottawa's DY4 Systems provides computing hardware for military and aerospace applications. Toronto's Nucon Optics sells high-powered binoculars and night vision products to hunters, law enforcement officials, and the military. Also based in Toronto, PCI Geomatics creates software for imaging and surveillance of large geographic areas. And Toronto's International Custom Products Incorporated, which at first appears to be a rather innocuous dealer of parachutes and protective cases, is in fact one of North America's leading manufacturers of the RAM air decelerators used in aircraft-deployed cluster bombs. The arms industry has changed dramatically since the end of the Cold War, shifting from mostly nationally owned and operated enterprises toward more privately run multinational companies. International production has not only provided a cheaper source of labor for dominant Western arms companies, but has also worked to undermine national export controls. Arms exhibitions have changed along with the industry. From 1976 until 1991, the British Army Equipment Exhibition and the Royal Navy Equipment Exhibition were held in alternate years in Aldershot and Portsmouth. In September 1993, these fairs were combined into a single showcase for Navy and Army equipment. After Tony Blair's Labour government was elected in 1997, the Royal Navy and British Army Equipment Exhibition was sold off to the commercial sector and DSEI was born. Significantly, the Royal Navy and British Army Equipment Exhibitions were showcases for UK companies selling to international buyers. Now, companies come from around the world, and their sales are arranged without being subject to UK export controls that might regulate the kinds of weapons that can be distributed and to whom. UK Ministry of Defence officials are adamant that the trade of weapons for cash in violation of UK export licensing laws won't be allowed at the site of the fair. But the government has little power to regulate deals that are made for the procurement of weapons and other military equipment at a later date. This week's arms fair is expected to attract as many as 20,000 military and government officials from around the world. These buyers will meet with international arms dealers to discuss and conduct business transactions for the purchase of weapons and military training. One in three of the world's governments will be shopping for military equipment. Adversaries will shop side by side for weapons to use against each other. And everyone in attendance will have been invited by the UK's Ministry of Defence, even though half of the countries invited are not even allowed to buy weapons under the UK's 2002 Arms Control Act, which bans arms sales by British companies to regimes which could use the weapons for internal oppression or external aggression. 80 governments have received invitations to this year's DSEI. While Iran, North Korea, Somalia, Yemen, and Indonesia won't be present, the invitation list includes Saudi Arabia, Syria, Algeria, Turkey, Israel, Pakistan, India, Afghanistan, China, and Colombia. Many of these countries have purchased weapons from UK companies over the past 2 years. Since Tony Blair's Labour government was elected, the UK has licensed arms and military equipment to 20 countries engaged in serious conflict. 14 of these countries were invited to DSEI 2001, and many have received invitations to DSEI 2003. The arms fair is thus directly engaged in fueling conflict around the world, enabling arms companies to sell weapons to countries on the brink of or even in the midst of military conflict. DSEI is organized and operated by a private company, Spearhead Exhibitions, but the fair is sponsored by the UK government. The UK's Ministry of Defence has provided £500,000 worth of financial support for this year's event. It is also supplying defence ministers and civil servants to attend, financing the visits of the UK government's invited guests, and paying for British military personnel to demonstrate equipment on behalf of arms companies. The Ministry of Defence rationalises its support for the DSEI with the argument that the defence industry brings £5 billion worth of revenue each year into the UK and provides 90,000 UK citizens with jobs. But the UK government subsidises the British defence export industry to the tune of £763 million each year, or £8,500 for each of the 90,000 jobs the arms business provides. While the arms trade accounts for only 2% of UK exports, it is the most heavily subsidized sector of the UK economy after agriculture. Over the past 5 years, the arms trade has absorbed more than 30% of the UK government's export development funding. The UK government provides a range of services for arms exporters, including face-to-face marketing by Tony Blair and his ministers, assistance with financing, and the support of a 600-member Defence Export Services Organisation, or DESO. DSEI is run in association with DESO, which is responsible for the promotion of UK arms exports and coordinates arms trade support within the Ministry of Defence and Parliament. Peace activists in the UK held large-scale protests against the last DSEI conference in 2001, and a wide range of protest actions have been planned for this year's events. As many as 60 grassroots groups and non-profit organizations from the UK and Europe say they will be joining the protests against DSEI. Disarm DSEI is the name of one coalition that is formed to shut down the conference. A number of organizations, including the Campaign Against Arms Trade, Reclaim the Streets, and Socialist Alliance, are involved in actions taking place over several days in London and elsewhere in the UK. Three peace activists were arrested last week after locking themselves into Spearhead Exhibition's headquarters. Staff from Spearhead had to break in through windows to ask the protesters to leave. A fourth person was arrested while trying to hang a banner from the outside of the building. Last Monday morning, about 40 activists blocked the two main entrances to the Excel Center while tanks and other military hardware waited to be brought inside for display. On Tuesday, 20 people descended on the headquarters of Fluent Limited, a computer modeling software company in Sheffield, barricading themselves inside revolving doors and hanging a banner over the main entrance that read, "Fluent, Deal in Death." On Wednesday, activists occupied the roof of a BAE Systems factory in Surrey, hanging a banner that read, "Destroy the arms trade." On Friday, activists from Birmingham staged a rooftop protest at the headquarters of Caterpillar, unfurling a banner that read, "Cater Killer, Demolishing Palestine, Demolishing Peace," in protest of the sale of armored Caterpillar bulldozers to Israel. On Sunday, as DSEI attempted to sail four naval warships along the Thames, 30 activists were able to disrupt the maneuver, and the last two ships in the convoy aborted their journey, stopping 7 kilometers downstream. Further protests like these are expected over the next few days. To respond to protests, Scotland Yard has drafted 1,600 officers from across London to police the event at a cost to taxpayers of more than £1 million. Many of these officers will be guarding the exhibition site itself, billed as a secure area and surrounded by heavily guarded fences and surveillance. It's very reminiscent of the kind of police presence witnessed at anti-globalization protests like those that are going to be held this week against the meeting of the World Trade Organization in Cancun, Mexico. It's ironic that this massive arms fair is being held concurrently with WTO negotiations in Cancun as the International Trade Policy Body tries to make headway on its so-called development round of talks. After all, the arms trade is antithetical to international development. Money spent on weapons and military defense cannot be spent on education, water, health, or housing. Arms fairs like the DSEI reveal clearly where the priorities of rich and powerful nations like the UK truly lie, in defending their own economic interests and military dominance. We'll have a report on the WTO talks in Cancun for you next week. Until then, this is Auntie Bee's Knees reminding you to put your money where your mouth is and invest ethically.
not too positive to say that politics is dumb. I should be saying something's got to give, or singing we shall overcome. But I'm too bummed, yeah. It's such a bummer when it always seems to come to the Tweedledum and Tweedledumber. Yes, the lesser of two evils, flip a coin or pick a number. Yeah, it stinks like a backup thing, and I think we need a plumber.
That was Dr. Dawes' Theory of Everything with a bit of the Greens Blues. Here's a recent interview with Jim Hightower about his newest book, Thieves in High Places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back.
We are talking today with Jim Hightower, national radio commentator, columnist, and political spark plug, whose last book, If the Gods Had Meant Us to Vote, They Would Have Given Us Candidates, is here in town for two things. One, to promote his new book, Thieves in High Places. They have stolen our country, and it's time to take it back, as well as he's on a Take Back America tour. Jim, thank you for coming in this morning.
Great to be with you, Mike, and this terrific community station.
Well, let me start out and ask you, Thieves in High Places, they've stolen our country. Who is the they?
The thieves, are the corporate kleptocrats, kleptocracy being a government of thieves, the corporate interests that have really usurped our people's sovereignty, our right to be a self-governing people over the last several years, but with a vengeance since George W. has come into power. These corporations, and they've got, you know, names like Monsanto and Microsoft and Dell and names like Walmart, names that we all know. These entities now are the ones who make the decisions about whether a Walmart comes bullying into your neighborhood or not, where a toxic waste dump is going to be located, who gets elected to the White House or to the Congress, decisions about what's in your food and what's in your network news feed, you know, now are corporate decisions. A tiny elite sitting in executive suites somewhere far away, making the decisions that affect our lives. So we're in another of those when in the course of human events moments, I think, that Jefferson wrote about a couple of hundred years ago. And now, instead of King George III, it's King George the W, and his autocratic, plutocratic, anti-democratic regime of thieves, the first thoroughly corporatized White House in my lifetime, in which not only are they representative of these corporate interests, but they are the corporate interests. George W. himself, a handful of oil companies and the Texas Ranger baseball team, Cheney, Halliburton, Rumsfeld, Searle Pharmaceuticals. You know, in fact, I've in the opening section there called Bushco, I've got a suggestion that they should all have to wear those little stickers that you get if you go to hotel conventions. Hi, I'm Donnie Rumsfeld from Searle. Hello, Dick Cheney from Halliburton. You know, you can see that little smile on it. But and then the other thief is my party, the Democratic Party. I've got a chapter in here called Wobblycrats, because they've jelloed on us. They have quit being the party of far and by the workaday people and become, you know, to put on the same Gucci's and Pucci's that the Republicans strut around in, taking the same corporate money and with that money accepting the corporate agenda. So basically the vast majority of people, again, just working stiffs, small farmers, people who really care about air and water and being clean, pure food, old folks, children, don't have a home. Actually politically homeless out there. No party clearly standing for them. So we have this kleptocracy that is running our country and, I dare say, ruining it in terms of our values, because the entirety of their theft is greater than the parts that we see, you know, a tax giveaway to the wealthy over here or rigging some regulatory rules over there. The entirety comes down to destroying the idea of the common good, the notion that we're all in this together, which is what holds us together as a society. We're a big, brawling, sprawling nation, and the one thing that keeps us stuck as a nation is the notion that we truly are united and that we believe in this concept of the common good. But these thieves now want to impose a new ethic of greed that says, I got mine, you get yours. never give a sucker an even break. Adios, chump. That's pretty much what they're saying to us, separating the good fortunes of the few from the well-being of the many.
Now, it seems that these thieves have been actually doing this for a long time, and it's just been, I don't know, you tell me, in the last few years that they've really taken it to a whole new level.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's really been coming with a perceptible push since the mid-70s. One thing was the Supreme Court made a ruling that money equals speech, which means, of course, those with more money have more speech, and nobody has more money than corporate power. And then about that time, a little bit later, the Democrats decided, hey, we could take those corporate checks that the Republicans are getting too. And as I say, with that check comes an agreement to accept the agenda that's written on the back of the check. So then Democrats and Republicans began to enthrone corporate power with things like NAFTA and the World Trade Organization, you know, these globs of globaloney, as I refer to them. Nothing wrong with trade, nothing wrong with strong international relations. I'm for all of that. But only the corporate interests and the governmental elites are sitting at the table doing the negotiation, cutting the deals, leaving the rest of us cut out, the farmers, the workers, the environment, small business, taxpayers, consumers. The larger public is not a part of those deals, so big surprise, we don't benefit from those deals. So this has been a function of deliberate policy through the Congress and the White House, whether Democrat or Republican, to empower these corporations over the rest of us. And now it's just overwhelming. I've got a section called Never Have So Few Done So Much for So Few, because it really has come forward since Bushko took office. And an aspect we don't hear about is the day-in and day-out rigging of the rules through executive fiat out of the White House, regulatory changes that are just, poof, made. No hearings, no public discussion, no vote, just bammo, you've got a wetland that you might live near and treasure, but it's now going to have a suburban sprawl development on it. And to give people some sense of the impact of these changes, rather than just say there have been blank number of these changes, I just put in small print page after page after page after page of just a listing of these things. You know, they say that in sex, using a feather is erotic, but using the whole chicken, that is kinky. And these guys are using the whole chicken.
So you started out with saying Democrats, I believe you said your party.
Yes, yes. I've been elected in the state of Texas, much to the amusement of the people down there. I was the state agriculture commissioner for two terms, elected as a Democrat and proud to have been so, proud of this, the great history and tradition of this party, of its populist principles and populist constituency. And I stood for that and represented that and tried to govern in those terms in the little area that I had in my 8 years in office. So I come to you as a Democrat, but one who sees that the money power has now seized my party as well as the Republicans, and my party has become, at a national level, something that that I don't even recognize.
Sticking with the concept of being a Democrat, you've also been described as a populist and a progressive. Do you see those all as compatible?
Oh, yes. Progressive, to me, is the large umbrella that incorporates all of those of us who share some basic values, and some of the within that umbrella or under it are people who consider themselves liberal, particularly focused on social issues, and then us populists who not only have a social value but also take an economic grassroots approach, believe that you've got to take on the concentrations of economic power, not just political power, if you're really going to have a democracy. And then others, the old progressive movement, who believes in just reform, regulatory reform, and that sort of thing. You've just got to manage the corporate power. And then folks, libertarian, strong libertarian streak, that is, you know, people who, like me, who care a lot about privacy and don't like either government or corporate power nosing around into our private business as they are doing day in and day out. So it's progressive is just the broad umbrella. I consider myself a populist. That is grassroots power that we ought to be establishing in the country so that the people actually are the ones who make the decisions, not only in terms of politics, who gets elected, but also in terms of economic power. Who the hell elected Walmart to come surging into any one of our communities without even telling us and usually getting secret subsidies from local or state government to do it, and then using their monopolistic power to drive out the independent businesses, the small hardware stores or the independent groceries or bookstores, et cetera. And then Walmart doesn't advertise on local radio or in the local newspaper. It handles all of that nationally. It doesn't do any local advertising agencies. So it siphons money out. And for every one job, one Walmart job that it creates, it destroys three other decent jobs. So it is a destructive force within our communities. Walmart, now the largest corporation in the world, surpassing General Motors and ExxonMobil, and it is a beast of a corporation. It's the largest employer, 1.2 million people around the world. Average wage, $15,000 a year. It considers full-time work to be 28 hours a week. no health care benefits. The largest discriminator against women in the world as well. 78% of its employees are women. Very few are managers, especially kind of top managers. Seems to have a philosophy of once you reach that glass ceiling as a woman, you're then asked to Windex it and move on. You know? That's why it has the largest class action sex discrimination suit in the history of the United States filed against it right now. So this is a behemoth of a corporation with brutish power that it exercises with apparent glee, and we don't have to take that.
That wraps up IMC Radio News for this week. The coordination of the UCIMC Radio News is funded by the Funding Exchange's Paul Robeson Fund for Independent Media. If you'd like to get involved with this show, drop us a line at radio@ucimc.org or call 344-8820 extension 1. No experience is necessary. Archives of this program are available at the IMC website, www.ucimc.org. Financial contributions are also welcome. You can send those checks to the UCIMC at 218 West Main Street, Urbana, Illinois, 61801. Dr. Da and his theory of everything will take us out. Take care and see you next week.
We're in this together for better. or a curse. We're in this together, for better or for worse.